All right, last but not least is our brother David Willis from Knoxville, Tennessee, a fourth-generation witness who found the way out. He thought there was no way out. David.
Oh, good afternoon, everybody. I hope you've enjoyed yourself at this Witnesses Now for Jesus convention. And I just want to say I'm thankful the rain has stopped. It rained for a week. My name is David Willis, of course. She's already introduced me. And I go by, if you know me online, I go by the nickname of Junction Guy. I frequent every one of the XJW boards. I titled my presentation No Way Out because this was basically how I felt growing up, that there's just no way out of my life. There's no way out of this situation. And, I was planning for Armageddon, and I thought, well, this was it. You know, my generation, children my age, we won't make it barely past high school. You know, it'll be here. The end will be by the end of the 20th century. So I brought a few notes with me so I don't get ahead of myself. I'll just go through periods of my life and explain certain things that went on. And let's see. Well, I'm a fourth-generation Jehovah's Witness. My grandparents, actually my great-grandparents, were Bible students in the 1920s in eastern Kentucky. A little place called Johnson County. County seat was Paintsville. And my great-grandmother was rumored to be one of the anointed. She died, I guess, about 1931. She had, during gallbladder surgery, she bled to death. But this was actually before, I believe, that the Watchtower Society prohibited blood transfusions. It was just an accident, you know, death. Her name was Pearl Collins, and she had married my great-grandfather, John Goble. And they were originally, from what I understand, they were members of the Church of Christ there in eastern Kentucky. And then someone came along from Pittsburgh. Someone came from Pittsburgh there and started working the area. And then they were one of the first ones that were receptive to the message in that area. My grandma, my maternal grandma, she was born into the religion because she was born in 1927, and they were already Bible students by then. And my mom, of course, was also born into the religion. My grandma, she married a man that wasn't a Jehovah's Witness. But that was before my grandma actually got baptized. And my dad, he was born and raised a Baptist. And by the time he was like 12 or 13, he started attending a Church of God. This was in Ohio after they'd moved to Ohio. And somewhere along, I guess it was the early 60s, a guy by the name of Bill Gilbert came to his door and brought the message of the kingdom hope. And, of course, he bought into it. And he was the first one on my dad's side of the family to actually get baptized. He was baptized at age 14, I believe, in 1960. And then right after that came his aunt. And then his other brothers and brothers and stepfather, and then his mom. She was one of the last few that actually she had to give up smoking. Well, actually, I don't think that was back in the 60s, that really wasn't a disfellowshipping offense, but she came in last. And so then he had all three of his aunts were now Jehovah's Witnesses, his two aunts and his mom. So the three sisters were all Jehovah's Witnesses, plus his stepdad. His real dad had abandoned him, left the whole family and took off, and they never did see him again until about 1975, I believe, 76. Well, I'll give you a little information about me. I was born in 1970 in Dayton, Ohio. And Larry Willis is my dad. And Monica Kennard is my mom. Kennard's her maiden name, of course. I had a brother. My brother came along in 1972, Darren. And he was a Jehovah's Witness. He's no longer. I will get to more of that later. I'll tell how that came about. But I've got some early childhood experiences. I can remember like going to the Philadelphia Convention. This was about 1974. And why we went to Philadelphia, I have no idea, because we were in Ohio. We would always went to Louisville or somewhere. For some reason, we went to the Philadelphia Convention. And I'm thinking it was indoors, but for some reason, it was really hot. I mean, I was 4 years old. I was screaming. And of course, I remember getting spanked a lot. A very lot. But you had to sit so still. You know, you had to be perfect little Jehovah's Witnesses. You had to sit up and pay attention and all that. I have a lot of other memories, too. I remember certain holiday times like Halloween, you know, and I was a little kid, and there would be people at the door at Halloween, and I'm like, I wanted to go answer the door. I was like, well, Dad, they're going to give us candy. He's like, no, son, you're supposed to give them candy. I'm like, oh, okay. I was wanting that candy. But I have a lot of memories, the early memories at the Kingdom Hall. I just remember there was a lot of negative stuff that went on. I mean, children spanked excessively over and over. And I don't know, it just seemed like it was something that we dreaded going. It was like going to the Kingdom Hall was like going to your own funeral or something. Because you knew that you would go in there. It was a given. One child was going to be beaten before the meeting ended, and you just prayed it wasn't you. So you go in there and you hear these kids screaming, and oh, you know, the kids would get wise. They would start screaming out for Jehovah, hoping. And I did that. I would scream out, you know, save me, Jehovah, save me, Jehovah. But also remember, my mom and dad had a very troubled marriage. There was a lot of fighting, a lot of arguing, and it really wasn't a peaceful home. Even though Jehovah's Witnesses claim to be the most peaceable people, a happy, loving religion, well, it wasn't in our home. We were quite a mess. I guess around 1975, of course, there was a lot of pressure on because Armageddon was coming, and there was a lot of arguments. And then finally, Mom and Dad just separated. And Dad went back. He lived with my grandma and grandpa down there in Miamisburg, Ohio. And then we kept the house. We stayed in the house. And, of course, we had weekend visits with Dad. We would go, you know, down to Miamisburg and stay a weekend, and then we'd come back. It always was there was a lot of negative energy. I don't know how you'd describe it in the air. It was highly negative when, you know, here comes Dad up there, and you know Mom and Dad are going to get into an argument, and as soon as you get in the car, Dad would say, well, you know, your mom's a bad person. And then when you get back home, it's, well, you know, your dad's, you know. It was the worst, one of the worst divorces, bitter divorces that I've ever seen. That I've known about. And in fact, whenever I see like people getting divorced and they're like remain friends and with, you know, when kids are involved, I'm like, wow, that's unusual. I've never heard of that. I thought all divorced people were bitter against each other. But after Mom and Dad split up, about a year later, the divorce was final, about 1976. And of course, we still stayed there at the house in Dayton. And Mom was still going to the Kingdom Hall, and we didn't like going to the Kingdom Hall. I mean, we we would hid the books. We knew that if they couldn't find the pink songbook and the green Bible, that we wouldn't be going to the hall. So we would hide them, and Mama would get so mad. And finally she found them. But so I ended up starting school there in Dayton, Ohio. And the very first thing when you go to kindergarten, you realize there's so much stuff, other things that you can't do. And it's like your mom, she has to go to school, explain to them why you can't participate in Christmas and why you don't celebrate birthdays and no Thanksgiving and all this other stuff. So it was very hard, you know, for kindergarten, because you felt like you were so different. I mean, you could try to blend in, but you always felt like you were so different. I remember seeing the Christmas decorations at school, and it just really, they were beautiful, and I wanted to participate, but of course, you know, from hearing at the meetings, you know, well, we don't celebrate Christmas, you know. So I just, you know, would just look at them and say, wow, I wonder what it'd be like to, you know, be like that. Just be happy and, you know, unknowing. And mom and dad divorced, and then my dad remarried. He remarried Sandy McCrory. This was about August 1977. And they've had a happy marriage. They've got along pretty good, and they lived there in Cincinnati for a while, and then they moved halfway between Dayton and Cincinnati, and then they finally moved to Dayton. And during this time period, you know, we would go, me and Mom and my grandma, we would go to Kentucky on the weekends. We'd go visit our family in Kentucky, but we never really stayed with the witnesses in our family. You know, I mean, it seems odd, but we would stay. Well, there was an aunt. She was a witness in belief. She didn't attend the meetings, but I believe she was baptized. And we would stay with her and her daughter, and her daughter's Rosemary, my cousin. And she was she's a member of the Church of Christ there in Kentucky. And we would stay with them, or there we'd go to my Uncle Worf's house. And they live in this small little community. You go down and you go across, and there's two railroad tracks, and there's a general store, about 500-600 people, and about six churches. And like four of them are Baptists, one's a Church of Christ, and then there's one like a Church of God. So we'd go down there and we'd visit them, and we got to see all the family, and we just really enjoyed it there. And I got to one thinking, you know, back then, well, why is it so different here? What's so different about it? You know, I couldn't figure it out at first. I couldn't figure it out. But I would go down there, and the children were so happy, and the families were so peaceful and together. And I just enjoyed going down there. And it's the little towns, we call it West Van Lier, but it's nicknamed the Junction. So that's where I get the name Junction Guy. I chose that because that's my favorite. That was my hideaway place, I guess you could say. It's for one weekend every 2 months. We could be a normal and didn't have to go to the Kingdom Hall. And so I would go down there, and we would go visit. And if I'm remembering correctly, my mom and grandma weren't getting along too well with the witnesses on our side of the family, my grandma's sister and the cousins. And there seemed to be, you know, a little tension here and there, and just, so we didn't even actually stay with the witness side of the family. We were down there, so it was a vacation from the Kingdom Hall. So come along about 1979. It was actually in January of 1979, first week of January. Grandpa called my grandma up from work and said, I don't love you no more. I want a divorce. And we were at school, and we got home, and we got in the car, and Grandma said, well, I've got something to tell you. And I said, what? She said, Grandpa wants a divorce. And that was the most traumatic thing at the time, you know, had ever been through. I mean, it was me and my brother. I was like seven or eight, and my brother was six. And it was just like we thought Grandpa was abandoning us. So, I mean, we were up all night, and we were crying. We were trying to figure out what was going on, and it was hard, and it was hard on everybody. And my grandma, she had a nervous breakdown. She had a nervous breakdown over it, and she stopped going to the meetings. And she still believes the watchtower. She still believes in the watchtower, but she doesn't go to the meetings. And she stopped right around that time period. And she goes to Memorial occasionally. But she stopped going to the meetings around that time period. Well, in 1979, my mom remarried, and she married a Mike Williams, and we moved to Texas. And this was a big traumatic event because we were being torn away from all of our family, everything we'd ever known, grandma, grandpa, everybody. And it was October. She decided, well, we're moving to Texas, and of course she was married, and it was his decision too. So we loaded up and we went down to San Antonio, Texas, and we stayed in San Antonio for about 2 months. And then they got a job just east of San Antonio in Seguin, Texas, at the Guadalupe Valley Hospital. And my mom at that time was a nurse's aide. And, of course, she was studying to be a nurse, to be a regular nurse. But, of course, that was discouraged. Any career like that was discouraged because Armageddon was so close. She'd already given up on that a couple years ago. So she was a nurse's aide. She had enough college, about 2 years of college, so she could be a nurse's aide. So she was doing that in Texas, and me and my brother both lived there and with Mom. She had custody of us. And so we went up to Ohio the following May for a summer vacation. And we went up there, and I can't even remember the assembly we went to that year. I think it was Louisville, Kentucky. Louisville was hot. Every assembly in Louisville's hot. But when we came back, from Ohio after the vacation, we were riding in the car, and Mom says, well, I've got some news to tell you. I said, okay, what is it? She said, I've been disfellowshipped. I said, what? And of course, she was already smoking at this time, and she'd already remarried. She'd been divorced and remarried. Of course, that's, you know, a no-no. So we were kind of shocked. We were like, you're disfellowshipped. And then she said yes, and she had the letter. And I wish I had that letter to this day, but I don't. So anyway, we were there in Texas, and we were living there during the time, I believe it was 1980, that Paul Blizzard, his baby girl, was needing a blood transfusion, and that issue came up. And I remember hearing about it on the news and stuff, and then one of Mom's friends said, that's just awful. That's just awful. They'd let their own children die, you know. What kind of religion is this? And, of course, I didn't know what to think, you know. I didn't know what to say, because I thought it was the truth or at some point. I mean, I didn't fully grasp it, but I didn't want to speak out against it either, you know, at that time. Well, anyway, after that, Mom and Mike got a divorce, and we moved back to Dayton, Ohio. And moved back in with Grandma, and we weren't going to the Kingdom Hall at that time, with the exception of on the weekends when we would go to our dad's house for the weekend. And we really didn't want to go, but we went. And so we stayed there for about 2 more years, and then my mom... We were at Dad's for the weekend. Then Mom takes us to a restaurant. It was a Roy Rogers roast beef. And she says, well, I'm moving to Mississippi. I said, okay. She said, you boys can stay with your dad. And I didn't want to. I did not want to at all. And I begged and pleaded. I said, I want to go. I want to go with you. I can't leave you. I don't want to stay with Dad. So I went with Mom. And Darren stayed behind, and we went to moved to Long Beach, Mississippi. This was just where Hurricane Katrina hit, the hardest area, and I'm sure where we lived is now gone. But we lived about a half mile from the beach. We went with some friends of hers that had some kind of a scheme with a mobile home moving company. It didn't work out. After we got down there, it didn't work out, and we were financially strapped. But we lived there in Long Beach, Mississippi, and then we eventually got our apartment. Just further on back, we lived in some government apartments. It was like what you call the projects. We lived a half a mile from the beach. And So we doing okay. Financially, we were, you know, a little hard-pressed for money, and we'd have to, food was kind of tight. I would go down and fish every day. I'd walk down to the Gulf right there on the coast, and I'd catch some fish and flounder or whatever. And so right around this time, Mom met this guy named Fred, and this was in November of 1982, actually. She met Fred, and she got remarried. And something just told me something wasn't quite right about him, but, you know, he put on a good show at first. She only knew him about a month before she was married. And then once they were married, then he became very abusive, and he drank like a fish. And drank. And drank. So, let me think. We were living there in Gulfport. We were living in Long Beach. And then we moved over to North Gulfport to a little place called Orange Grove. And I quit going to school because at that time, Mississippi didn't have a compulsory education law, or else it was just till age 12. So I'd quit going to school, and we'd move there, and I just didn't want to go to school. So he was very abusive to my mom, very abusive to me. And he would say bad things about my whole family. He just didn't like anybody. So my grandpa, who had remarried, I forgot to mention this, he had remarried Clara in 1979, not too long after the divorce was final. But he came down to Mississippi, and he saw how we were living there, and he didn't like it, and neither did his wife. So she said, well, we'll take you back to Ohio. You can go live with your dad. I really didn't want to, but I didn't have a choice. I mean, it was either my life or my sanity, you know, my sanity as a Jehovah's Witness or my life. So I said, well, I guess I'll move back to Ohio. So I moved back to Dayton, actually Miamisburg, in 1983. I enrolled in school there. Of course, the very first thing Dad has to do is file some papers with the school, says, you know, my son will not take any blood, and I believe that time it was not even parts, but you can have expanders, fillers, dextrose, and all this. I can almost remember it all. So I went to school there, and I was in the sixth grade, and then it was May, the last week of school, sixth grade, I started having stomach pains really bad. It was on a Monday, and it was field day at school, and we were in the tug of war, and I wasn't feeling good anyway, so I believe our team won, but we tugged and tugged, but my stomach was hurting really bad. And the next day, I was really sick and vomiting, and they took me to the hospital, and they said, well, you have a 24-hour flu. Okay, so they sent me home. And this went on another day. I went back to the same hospital, said, no, you've got gastroenteritis. Okay. Sent me home. Well, by the fourth day, by Thursday, I believe it was, I mean, I woke up. My skin was splotched all over. I was green. I looked like camouflage pants, but in a, you know, the tree bark type. I was green all over. So my stepmom says, we're taking you to Dr. Krause. And Dr. Krause was our family doctor, and he was one that was very supportive of the no blood issue. That's why they chose him, of course. So we went to Dr. Krause, and he said, well, we're going to send you to the hospital, and we're going to have to do some exploratory surgery, find out what's going on with you. So we get in there, and then I go to the hospital, and I go for the x-rays, and I'm so weak I can't even stand up. And they're taking these x-rays over and over and over. But the pain had stopped. I thought, wow, I feel better. And I was just weak, but there was no pain. I said, wow, I feel better. So the doctor came in, the surgeon, Dr. Hagen, came in, and he said, well, he's pressing around on my stomach, says, now, let me know if this hurts. And he pushed in, and he let out, and I jumped up off that bed screaming. He said, it's your appendix. I said, oh. So he said, oh, if we're going to do surgery, we'll get this appendix out. And something, my dad was talking to him about the blood issue. Well, the doctor came back in the bed, and Dad was standing outside the room. He said, I know your parents don't want you to have a blood transfusion, but I want to hear from you he said, now, how do you feel about this? And I'm thinking, well, gee, Dad's standing outside the room. I don't know what to say. So finally, I just looked at him and I said, do what you have to do. I don't want to die. I said, I don't want to die. And he said, well, are you afraid your dad's listening? And I said, like this. I didn't say yes or no, because I knew he was listening out there. So I said, just do what you want, because I don't want to die. So anyway, they operated on me, and I was in the hospital like 17 days for my appendicitis. Nearly died. I had tubes come out every which way. And so anyway, right after that, we moved into a house there just near Miamisburg, and we were going to the congregation. It's called Singing Hills Congregation. It was in Centerville, Ohio. And we started arguing a lot. And our whole family was just arguing. There was no peace in our family. It was always over or something, some little thing that, you know, something you weren't doing quite right, what the watchtower said. And of course, I was, you know, wasn't one to keep quiet when I was younger. Of course, I didn't have all the knowledge about certain things about Jehovah's Witnesses back then. I was just pretty much limited. And I would go to school, I'd go through the libraries, and I'd look for anything that even mentioned Jehovah's Witnesses. Nothing. Nothing in the libraries. It was just like it was non-existent. So we lived with Dad and Sandy there, and we didn't want to go to the Kingdom Hall. I mean, we were always running behind, and Dad always wanted to be the first one there. He hated to be late. Of course, you know, you're always in the car going to the meeting. You're yelling at each other because you're running behind and you're not, you know. So I guess it was like later on, about 2 or 3 years later, that it reached a point. We were just arguing over everything. And what started, my brother was wanting to play basketball in school. And this was like seventh grade. And he was a pretty good basketball player. And, of course, you know, Dad said, no, you can't do that. You know, that wouldn't be spiritual. And Darren, my brother, he begged and pleaded, and I argued, and I said, and I was bringing up issues back then that I thought, you know, I would say things like, well, Armageddon, they said Armageddon was coming years ago. And I really didn't know. I just said that. I didn't have no proof of that. It was just a feeling I had. You know, I kept saying stuff. We just got into big arguments, and I said, well, that's it. So let's move, told me and my brother. So let's go live with Mom. We can't take this anymore. So there we go. We switched custody and get on the plane. We moved to Mississippi, and we enrolled in school down there. And, of course, you know, she said Fred had changed, and he's a new man. He's different. He hadn't. Same old Fred. So but he was working offshore in the oil wells. So he would be off for 2 months working, and then he'd come home for a month. So we had 2 free months without him. So it was relatively fun. Well, you know, he was offshore. And Mom just reminded me of this, and I'd forgot all about this. But during that first year that me and Darren both lived there, it was 1986, that we went to a memorial there. I don't remember this, but she swears we went to the memorial. I mean, I'm having vague memories of it, but she says they all shunned her there. And because she said she was disfellowshipped, she told them she was disfellowshipped. So, of course, she was shunned. I don't even know why we would even went to the memorial, but for some reason we did. So we went back to Ohio for the visit for the summer. And then I discovered some things during that summer that, you know, that my stepfather had, we knew he was abusive, but I didn't know he'd pulled a gun on my brother and threatened to shoot his brains out. And I didn't know this, but Darren said, well, I can't go back. I'm going to have to stay here with Dad. So I said, oh, okay, you stay with Dad. I guess I'll go back, you know. So I went back, and then we lived down there, and this was in 1987. And then my great-grandma, the one that my great-grandpa had married after his wife had died from the bleeding from the gallbladder surgery, he had remarried her. Her name was Rida. It was my grandma Rida. He'd remarried her almost a couple years after she had died. Well, anyway, this was 1987, and I was at school, and Mom, I was at some kind of pep rally, and they said, you need to come to the office. I said, okay. So I get to the office, and Mom was crying. She was like, well, Grandma Wright has died. I said, Grandma Wright has died? She said, yeah. I said she had it was either a heart attack or an aneurysm. She's died. So I was so upset. She said, well, we're going home. We're packing our stuff, and we're moving back to Ohio. So it was sadness. It was so sad because my grandma died. But yet I was so happy to get away from there and get Mom back to Ohio and get our family back at least somewhat together. So we moved back to Ohio, and then we were in Ohio about 6 months. We stayed with Grandma, and I went to work with my grandpa. He was in the flea market business. He had this big truck, and he would go to all these flea markets on the weekends, and he would sell tools and stuff at flea markets. Well, we went to this 9-day event. It's called the Black Powder Shoot, the National Muzzle-Loading Rifle Association. It's in Indiana. So we were there for 9 days, and then found out when Mom moved back to Mississippi, went back to Fred. Yes, she moved back. So I was angry. I mean, I couldn't even go to sleep. I was so mad. I went back and I said, told Grandma, I said, well, I'm just going to stay here with you. I don't want to go live with Dad, and I can't go to Mississippi. I don't want to go to Mississippi. So I stayed there with Grandma, and then I started going back to the Kingdom Hall again. The lady behind us was an elderly lady. She was going to the hall, and then the neighbor beside of us was a witness. The whole neighborhood was about witnesses. So I started going to the Kingdom Hall, and Grandma would go occasionally. And I would encourage her to go, but I was going more regular than she was. So anyway, I was going to the Kingdom Hall, and then I was in school still. And I was kept on with my high school there in Ohio, and kept going to the Kingdom Hall. And my school, my studies, I did pretty good. I mean, I was pretty intelligent. I could do things, and, you know, but I just didn't apply myself because I didn't see no reason. I figured, well, you know, Armageddon's coming, and, you know, the 1914 generation, they're now 70-some years old, so I mean, it can't go on much longer. So we had our little open house at the school for all the colleges would come in. They'd set up their little booths, so I went around, and it was just a goof-off day for me because I didn't have no intentions of going to college. Just a free day. So anyway, right around this time, back around 1989, guess what? Mom comes back to Ohio. So this is not the end. So she comes with nothing but the clothes on her back and a car that had been wrecked, that he was drunk and hit up against a light pole. So, and then when she got to Ohio, she forgot to change over from water to antifreeze, and this was in, I believe, February. So in Ohio, the engine block froze up and cracked. So she had no car now. But she had worked a few jobs here and there, and she'd saved and got her a car. And then I think by this time I quit going to the meetings again. I quit going to the Kingdom Hall. So me and Mom got an apartment in not too far from where Grandma lives. We got an apartment, and I was working at Pizza Hut. I was delivering pizzas, and she was working in a clothing store, and things were going well, you know, as well as it could be. But so we moved to Huber Heights, Ohio, which is just on the north side of Dayton. We got another apartment, and then one day, she comes downstairs and says, I've got some news for you. She said, I'm going back to Mississippi. So she moves back to Mississippi, and she gets remarried to Fred. Of course, I try to stop it. I called up every courthouse on the Gulf Coast. I said, this man is probably a polygamist. You need to check him out. So I don't know where they finally got remarried, but probably wasn't there. But So then I was stuck. It was me and her both were splitting the rent and the expenses. So now she's moved, and I've got this apartment. And here I am delivering pizzas. And then I take a second job working at a video store. Then I decide, well, I could just move back in with Dad. So here I was, already out of high school, and I decide, well, I'm going to move back in with Dad. So I moved back in with Dad. It's just temporary. Then he says, well, we've got plans. We're going to move to Michigan where the need's greater. By this time, he was already an elder. He was made an elder about 1982. He said, well, we're moving to Michigan where the need's greater. I'm thinking, Michigan? Well, I think he got wind because Mom was moving to Florida. They were leaving Mississippi and moving to Florida. He had originally planned to go to Florida and start a window washing company. So next thing you know, he's moving to Michigan, the total opposite end of the map. So I tried to decide what I want to do. I'm like, okay, Mom's gone. She's down there. And Dad's going to Michigan. What do I do? I said, well, I want to move to Kentucky. I've always wanted to move to Kentucky. So I pack up my stuff. I decide, well, I've always wanted to live down there. And, you know, I'm going to get away from everything, you know, just, I'm always happy down there in Kentucky, and I can get away from the witness lifestyle and, you know, and all that. So I moved down to Kentucky, and I get a job working at Domino's Pizza, and it's about all you can do there without a college education. You deliver pizzas or... So I moved there to Kentucky, and I worked there at Domino's Pizza for a while, and then I took a job at Kentucky Finance, which was a loan officer and a bill collector, and I had this—I had to go out and go to people's houses, door to door, and collect. So I hated this. Here I was out in my suit and tie. I'm going to people's houses, knocking on their doors. It just deja vu. It just reminded me. I guess you could say that. It reminded me of earlier times. Well, I didn't like it. But I was there at the office, and I sit there during the office during the day. And then, of course, right around this time, I started becoming friends with the other side of the family that I really didn't know down there, the Jehovah's Witness side, which was my aunts and their daughters and husbands. And so I started becoming friends with them because I never really knew them. When I would visit there, we would never visit them. So I started becoming friends with them, and then I believe it was either my cousin Joanna or her cousin Keith that said, wanted me to go back to the Kingdom Hall. I believe it was Joanna. She wanted me to go back to the Kingdom Hall. I said, I didn't know what to say. I said, well, okay, I'll give it one more try. You know, I'm thinking, I'll give it one more try, you know. So we go to the Kingdom Hall there in Paintsville, and then a little while later, she says, well, we're going to switch to this other congregation. It's only 17 miles out this way. I said, but it's a whole different world. Oh, they're happy. They're not so negative that they are at this congregation. I said, okay. So we start going out there, and it seemed a little different. There were some younger people there, and it wasn't there were some younger people for, you know, you could talk to that could relate. So we went out there for a while, and then my cousin Keith says, well, you want a Bible study. And I'm thinking, wow, this is insulting because here I was raised in this my whole life, and he wants to have a Bible study with me? That's what I'm thinking, because he was only a marginal witness. You know, his side of the family, they would go occasionally. They weren't pioneers. They weren't elders. They were just the occasional witness. So anyway, I decided to take him up on the Bible study. And it got to be, started out good, but then we started, you know, arguing over stuff that just didn't make sense to me. And he was very negative about things, very judgmental, you know, even more than my dad, if that was possible. So we just started arguing. And then one day, I said something about the watchtower being man's word. He said, oh, no, that's Jehovah's word. I said, no, the Bible is Jehovah's word. The watchtower is just man's interpretation of it. Oh, no. So we started arguing, and I said, this is enough. I can't go on like this. So I quit going to the meetings, and I quit the study. And so right around this time, I'm thinking, this was like 1993, I'm thinking, Okay, Armageddon, it's bound to be here. Well, look, next year they'll be 80 years old, the 1914 generation. We're living on borrowed time. So all this time that I, all this time growing up, you know, all this anxiety, I had a lot of anxiety and depression. And I couldn't make up my mind. I knew that I had to make up my mind whether I needed to be baptized or not, because everything hinged on whether I got baptized. I couldn't date. I couldn't get married. I had to make up my mind. Did I want to be a Jehovah's Witness or didn't I? Because I knew one wrong move either way, and it would have tremendous consequences. So right around 19, I'm leaving off a whole lot of stuff here because I did. I'm leaving off. I did start going to a church one time in the early 90s, right before I moved to Kentucky. And I went to a church. It was a Baptist church in Miamisburg, Ohio. And they asked me if I wanted to be saved or do I want to get saved? Do you want to accept Jesus? And I'm thinking, well, I don't know about this. I mean, I didn't want to sound like I was rejecting him. But I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to answer her. So I said, sure. So they were all laying hands on me, praying. But, you know, I was saying I was saved after that, but there was really no heartfelt. I mean, I just did it because I didn't want to be seen as somebody that, you know, that rejected Jesus, even though I didn't understand what the beliefs were at the time. So anyway, go on to 1994. And I'm thinking, okay, Armageddon is surely going to come. And I've only got a couple years left. What can I do with a couple years? I decided, well, you can't get baptized. I made up my mind. And this was how I figured it. This was my own reasoning. I got to thinking, okay, now what if Armageddon comes and the Jehovah's Witnesses are correct? I will be destroyed. Okay. But you just die. You're out of existence. There's no hell. You just die. And I got to thinking, and this is my own mind thinking, and I'm thinking, okay, how does other people deal with life with no future possibilities? And I got to thinking, well, you know, there's a bunch of atheists out there throughout the years. When they died, they had no hope. And this is how I reasoned at the time. I figured, well, you know, if they can die, live a life and die with no hope of a future, maybe I can too. I can just get destroyed and be done with. So anyway, I decided, well, what am I going to do? I have maybe a couple years left. And I said, well, I can't do a college. Can't go to college. There's just not enough time to fulfill any kind of career, 4 years. And then I said, well, I want to get married. I was lonely. And I met my wife, Amanda. And at this time, I'll let her come up and tell the story.
Well, a little bit of my background. I was raised in the military as an Army brat. My family did not believe in going into church, but they believed in the Bible. I was 18 when I accepted Jesus in my life, and 18 when I was first baptized. I was sprinkled as a child, as an infant, in the Methodist church, but I never knew what it meant. It was about March of 94. When I first gave my life over. 2 weeks later, after being saved and being baptized, this man calls. He was working for my mother at Domino's Pizza, who was the general manager of the store. He was the delivery driver. He came into the store one day and goes, well, I wish I could find a halfway decent girl who's of age and blah, blah, blah. And my mom's assistant manager opens her big mouth. Well, Nancy has an 18-year-old daughter, me. Well, he was afraid, not dating prior or anything, and he made a comment to my mom, well, bring me a picture. And my mom comes back to the house and goes, I need a picture. I was like, Mom, there's albums and covers and everything. She goes, no, I need a recent picture. I said, Mom, there's not one unless you go prom picture. From last year. So she takes that to him. He's still scared. And very scared. I just had this attitude when I was younger that, you know, I was going to go out and conquer the world, no matter what it took, no matter who I hurt, no matter what. And I was just very shy at the time, but I knew a lot of people and I knew a lot of things. No.
The picture wasn't the best one she's taken. It didn't show her, you know, she was a lot more beautiful than the picture showed. So I was a little leery at first. I'm like, she's like, here's a picture of my daughter. I was like, yeah, you have a daughter.
At the time, my hair was cut like very short, very curly. I was heavier then. So it was a very scary picture. I don't even think I don't even think my mom's put it out anymore. Well, he calls me. It was March 26th, 94. He calls me on a Saturday morning, and I'm going. He goes, "Well, why don't we go out on a date? And we'll double date, so it won't be as scary for both of us." I was like, "Yeah, sure, no problem." I didn't know what to expect. As myself, I didn't date either. I had a drill sergeant for a father. I was the only girl. We didn't date. So he comes up driving in this white Cadillac, coming into my driveway, and I'm going, no way. I'm just going to go right up this back door and hide, go down the creek bed or hide somewhere. And he knocks on the door. I'm shy. My hair is covering my face. I don't want to be seen. And my mom has to talk for me because I was speechless. Well, the date goes okay. We go into this town that I had worked before as a phone girl for Domino's Pizza a couple years earlier. So I knew everybody. I went up to school up there, so I knew everybody. There was at least five or six people that we had ran into and I knew. We went to the movies. And the rest of it's basically history. 4 months later, we were married.
Well,
the reason why we were married, I was still in high school, and I wanted to wait another year. I wanted to wait till I graduated high school and go on and be everything I thought I could be. But he didn't want to wait.
No, I didn't. She was like, "Well, why don't we wait another year and see what happens?" And I'm thinking in the back of my head, oh, no, we'll be destroyed by then. We've got to get married now. I didn't tell her that reason, but that's what I was thinking. I thought, okay, I will die. I'll never get married, never have kids.
And at the time, I didn't know what a Jehovah's Witness was. The only encounter that my family ever had of one was a Saturday morning after my dad had just came out of the field, and my dad was slamming the door in their faces, telling them, "Get off my property or I'll shoot." That's as much as we ever knew. And his family on his dad's side, they all refused to come to the wedding. His great-grandmother was sick at the time, and his grandmother pulled me out of the hospital room.
My dad's mom.
And asked me, "Amanda, you do know why we can't be there, right?" And I said, thinking, "Well, yeah, look, your mother's sick." And she said, "No, that's not the real reason. The real reason is why we can't be there is you're having a Methodist preacher marry you."
Yes, I got to tell this. So anyway, after we decided to get married, we had to work out the details, when and where and how. I'm thinking, oh, great, now what? Can't do it in the kingdom hall. Can't do it in the church. No, what do we do? So I thought, well, let's get married at my uncle's house. We'll do it right up there on the patio. Now what we need to do is just find somebody to marry us. So we're looking around and we're trying to find somebody to marry us. And this little county in Kentucky, it's like ground zero of the Bible Belt. I mean, there's like 26,000 people, and the county is dry. It's been dry since World War II. And everybody in that county that's not a Free Will Baptist is probably a United Baptist or maybe a Church of Christ. So it's like ground zero of the Bible Belt. So I go in and I'm looking for somebody to marry me. And I'm like at the courthouse. I'm like, well, can anybody do this? Like, not a preacher, you know? I wanted to be a secular service. And they looked at me crazy. It was like, why would you want that? Because they just didn't understand that there, you know. The concept of a secular ceremony was just something not understood there. So, anyway, we found this Methodist minister. And how much longer do I have? About 5 minutes. Okay. So, anyway, we get married. The Methodist minister marries us. And, of course, none of my dad's family show up at the, the wedding. None of my dad's family show up. My brother does show up, and he's a baptized witness at this time. And he brings his wife, and she's just not happy to be there. You know, she just went out of obligation. So, which incidentally, my mom wasn't invited to my brother's wedding. He had to go tell my mom, call her up and tell her she was not welcome. She could come to the Kingdom Hall because it was a public building. But other than that, she's not welcome. So, but anyway, that's another story. So we get married, and of course we're having a lot of financial trouble, and then we decide to move to Florida. Mom gets us a job down in Florida working in the motels, so we moved down there, and we're down there about a year and a half. We were just so homesick, so we decided we need to move back a little closer, so we moved to Tennessee. So we moved to Tennessee, and that first year we lived there in Tennessee, it rained every day from March to July. Every, just like you had here, except for the past week, you had it for weeks there. And we were so depressed. We were fighting and arguing. And we split up. And she went back to Kentucky. And I stayed there. We lived in this little one-room cabin. I stayed in the cabin. And right around Christmas time, somebody was talking about the internet. And I'm like, I'm almost through here, so I'll make sure I get this in. Somebody was telling me about the internet, and I just didn't like the idea of the internet. I just thought that was something from the devil. You know, I'm just thinking this is kids no longer go out and play outdoors; they're always on the internet. And so I buy this little web TV unit, and this is when she was already up there in Kentucky, and this was Christmas Eve. And I'm thinking, well, I'm gonna buy this, but surely there's something on there apostate. I was just thinking, there's got to be something apostate on there. You can bet there's going to be something. But I couldn't figure out what it was. So I said, well, I'm going to buy, I bought this web TV. And there I was. It was Christmas Eve. And I was in that apartment cabin. I was all alone. No family. No friends. I was 100 miles from my other family. And I click on there. And the first thing I do, I find something. I believe it was Free Minds. And I'm looking. And I'm seeing, well, the 1914 generation's been change. Ask me, what's the most important thing or person in your life? And I wanted to say Jesus, but as witnesses, you never say Jesus. You know, Jesus is always down there. You don't say, I love Jesus or Jesus is important. So it bothered me. So I went to church that next week. I thought, let's go to church. Well, it was about 2 weeks later after we got back from Kansas. 2 weeks later, I went to church. I think you stayed home or went to another church. But I went to church. It was at the... You had to work. Okay. So anyway, I went to church with my cousins there, and it's a little church. It's called the Rock House Free Will Baptist Church. And I went to church there, and then the preacher said something, and it struck my heart. And right then and there, I was like, you know, I thought I was saved because I'd already went to church earlier, but I wasn't really saved, until I went to, something told me, you need to go to the altar. And I just went to the altar there, and I just prayed and prayed. Careers and everything. They don't understand what it's like to be grown up, and you're on a death sentence. You're just waiting. You're on death row, just waiting for Armageddon. So I thank you for your time, and may God bless you.